Oh, 10 years.
Can I ask what we're counting 10 years from? I know it's a little tricky. It's not our first meeting in the living room, and it's not our first Easter here. So what is it? What is this 10 years from?
This is, we have counted weirdly.
We know.
We have counted weirdly. This is 10 years from the beginning, which is all of those things as a mesh together.
Mm-hmm. One of my favorite things in the history of our church is how the Easter has become like a mark for our growth as a family. Because the first Easter, we had one service. And we were so excited. And we had it in here. The next year, we had two services. And the next year, we had three services. The next year, we had four services. It was almost like our Easter services were counting how many years old we were.
Yeah, I think that in the following year, we blew out the back wall. If you think the building's small now, imagine a wall in the middle.
Yeah.
It was small before.
But, yeah.
All right, so Em, I want to hear, 10 years in, what did you expect?
I kind of thought like, man, if we hit a worldwide pandemic 7 years in, we should be sitting real pretty 3 years after that. So I kind of nailed it.
Had that pandemic word a while ago.
Yeah. No, I think I never thought it wouldn't be a thriving church. I had very many ideas of what we would be 10 years, but I knew we would be something. I knew that your dream and vision for a church coming true, or we wouldn't exist. Because I knew that you and our team just weren't willing to compromise. So to me, whatever 10 years was where we were supposed to be, which I feel like is true. I honestly did envision we'd have a different building than this one, but I love this building. And I mean, goodness knows we've tried, but that's it. I thought I turned it off three times. I checked.
I think it's, you know, for people who are part of our church over the last, you know, anything from recent to just over the last several years, I think when they hear about the beginning of our church, it just has such a unique element to it. But for me, I think part of what people don't know, and I don't often kind of take the time to fully share, is part of the reason that we planted the square as we did, like missionaries out of our home. We didn't intentionally build a team, though there were a few really faithful people who came with us. It was because in my own heart, the thing that was so desperate inside of me was to see the gospel change people's lives, not because of a service or a building or a program, that whatever this church was going to be, it just had to be because the gospel is that real and powerful. And for me, in that, it was scary.
Yeah.
You know, because it was not only the way people tell you not to plant a church. It was like taking all of where I felt gifted or skilled and tying both all those hands behind my back and forcing me to actually trust Jesus, which I thought I was really good at prior to planting the church. And was a whole new paradigm for me. And so even you talking about, like, you know, there was this idea that it was going to be something or something beautiful or nothing at all. I even remember a distinct conversation I had where I was feeling the tension of how we were planting, the choices we were making, what we felt was right.
Yeah.
And I remember somebody who was a mentor basically looked at me and just said, I promise you the last thing you want. He said this is 10 years in to look at your church and realize you don't even want to attend it.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, plant the church that's in your heart. Better it fail than you plant a church you wouldn't even want to be a part of. I can say, I have no idea what I expected 10 years ago. I think 10 years ago, I was just so overwhelmed by getting from each step to the next step. I couldn't see anything but the next step in front of me. But it is pretty amazing to know the one thing we wanted was to plant a church we wanted to be a part of 10 years later. And I can say that's the one thing I know happened.
We have a lot of people move to Georgia for various reasons that we know we're either relationally connected with, or they know we're here, so they move here and reach out. And I am as biased as it comes about the square. And especially if they're hurting, or they've been wounded specifically by church, or they don't know what they believe, or they're on the fence about their faith, I tell them with a certainty that I can stand behind that if you come to the square, you will be loved. You will find community. I just trust this place and the people here so much. And I don't generally put myself in that, in the way of those people to be part of that reconciliation and healing. I don't have to. I know that they can find community here. And over again, people walk in. They say, I feel like I'm home. And it's the church community that comes around them and loves them back into health and wholeness in Jesus. And I am always of the opinion that you should be obedient to the Lord. So when people go to other churches because the Lord speaks to them, I don't feel anything but excitement that they're being obedient. But aside from a word of the Lord, I think we have the best church around. And I honestly, I have no ego in that. It's because of the people here that I just, I know you'll be safe here. I know someone will be safe here.
Some ego in that.
None ego. None ego.
What do you miss about the first few years? Do you miss anything at all?
No, I miss a few things. So most people weren't at the square when it was in the garage, but this is what my Sunday looked like. I would put Rowan down for a nap from like 1 to 3. I would like clean the house as best I could. And then around 4 o'clock, our team would show up, and generally with a frozen, remember those frozen lasagnas from Costco? Mm-hmm. We'd have 2 of them. We'd put them in the oven. We learned not to cook them frozen because that takes 5 hours. We'd thaw them, put them in the oven. Then around 5 o'clock, the team would eat, and then we would like do little things together. We'd set up the chairs downstairs. Rowan and Jacob would be playing. Jenny and Chris would come. And so Haven and Oliver would be playing in the playroom, and we would be downstairs praying, pre-service prayer. And it literally starting in my home, I miss. And all of the familiarity that came with that. But they actually didn't have to come upstairs if I wasn't, right? You know, like if it was just the team, they'd come upstairs, but like most people stayed in the garage. And I think that it served me and specifically the other moms on staff so well to be able to like be present in the service and just go upstairs and see our kiddos and put them to bed. Like, and the girl who ran Pixels, the very first Pixels leader, Jenny, would put them to bed as part of Pixels curriculum. She would put the little boys to bed upstairs. I miss the intimacy of those times and how easy it was to hang out afterwards and laugh and talk and like, yeah, I miss those. The easiness of it. And I kind of miss the seasons where there wasn't a lot at stake. You know, like we didn't have a building, we didn't have that many people. You know, on every given Sunday, the ability to pivot and listen to the Holy Spirit, it just was we had greater opportunity because there was less earthly things at stake. And we are a church that listens to the Holy Spirit. But we still are serving hundreds of people on a weekend, and we have Pixels, and now we have, you know, properties and all of these things that we have to worry about that we just didn't have to worry about back then. And I miss sometimes the simplicity of that. You probably felt like a lot was at stake those first few years because that was like the make or break it. I was like, whatever happens, happens. Doesn't matter.
I will say I agree. Not in this, from the same vein, but there's something really beautiful about the simplicity in those first seasons.
Remember the cookies we bought? Where were those from? Kroger?
They were.
Yeah. We always had those little soft, yellowy, white ones with sprinkles. Mm,
they're Publix.
Publix cookies. And we just needed 2 packs. That fed everyone. And then we had these water dispensers from a less expensive store because all we could afford. And then they leaked. Like the rubber gasket didn't work, and they would just leak, and we'd have paper towels, and it's just that little snack setup we were so proud of when we first did it. We're like, we have a budget, we can afford snacks, and it was 2 sleeves of cookies.
And
lemonade.
Do you have some distinct moments just over the last 10 years that stand out as some of like the most significant moments in the story of the square?
There are some prophetic words that have carried the square and some prophetic words that have carried me. One of those is when we were in the garage, you know, we fluctuated in size, but sometimes we'd have a Sunday with 20 people and then a Sunday with 45. And you're like, we more than doubled. And it felt like you had this momentum. And then the momentum would not be there the next week. And you feel it a little bit. And the Lord gave me this picture of the, of just like the chickens, like Tyson or whatever brand just pumps their chickens full of like fluid and antibodies. I don't know the science behind raising chickens, but basically they get them so fat so that they can sell the meat, but they grow so rapidly that they can't walk. So these chickens are just contained for life because their legs haven't grown at the same rate as their weight. And the Lord just gave me this vision that if you are growing too quickly, you won't be able to sustain the weight of it. And that really helped me slow down in the garage season. And even when we lived on the property here, of like, I never wanted the square to grow quickly because I remembered that word that we can look on the outside like we're big, but we're just filled with water and antibiotics. Fleshy, bloated. Yeah. I don't want to be a fleshy, bloated church. So that was significant to me.
Pre this, I didn't think I needed to say, don't say fleshy or bloated, but we'll chalk that up for the 20-year anniversary.
Okay, that's my standard for the next 10 years. I'm not allowed to say fleshy or bloated. A really significant moment was when Asher Berry got dedicated, because Jenny was pregnant with Asher, like as the church was being birthed. And it was this really sweet parallel to walk alongside a church we were birthing and my sister who was pregnant. And then she and Chris dedicated him in the garage in his little fleshy baby. And I remember praying over him and just thinking like, oh man, this is a representation of like the goodness of God in our lives, that I get to walk personally with my sister and with this church in like new life. So that was really significant. Our first baptism in this building was, I think we would both say, like one of the watershed moments of the church, because it was not just someone we dearly loved personally, but it was someone coming to know Jesus because of the way people at the square lived their lives. Yeah. It wasn't the right sermon. It wasn't the right programs, all these things that are good, but not the heart behind the square. But he said he just looked at all the people he loved and admired and respected. And the one thing they all had in common is they were Christian. And then the square people were the Christians that went to Rev the most. So we got them. Good for us. That was important. I think when we took this building, that was also really exciting. Not because we got the building, which was great, but honestly because of how much work it had to have done. It was kind of like, you're in or you're out at the square. If you love this church, you will be weed whacking, you know, 5-foot grass everywhere. You'll be pulling up asbestos with masks. Did we make people wear masks?
I don't know.
But say we did, for insurance sake. Peeling off paint, tearing up moldy carpet.
But here's the beauty of that. That's true. I mean, to be part of the square in that season was not glamorous, glorious. I mean, it was a high end level of commitment of something beautiful that God was doing. But what I love is, even though seasons have changed a little bit, there's still that element that's true of us.
Asbestos?
No asbestos. But one of the things that's been hard for me in some ways is feeling all of the challenges of the churches, the largest it's been, still within the same size limitations. And when it's pouring rain in our gravel parking lot, when Campbell is full and people have to park on the side of the road or at the park, when it floods on the Saturday night before, and we're spending our setup time on Sunday morning cleaning up the downstairs, when the AC unit has gone out, when it's raining and you can't even hear what's happening inside because the roof is so loud. There are times where I'm like, it's so inconvenient. We put so many obstacles. We don't have a foyer. If you want to talk with someone, you have to stand outside. And if it's raining, good luck. And there's a part of me that struggles because mm-hmm. I genuinely don't want to put I'd rather put the obstacles of loving your enemies in front of people. I'd rather put the obstacles of loving Jesus and the challenge of Jesus. I don't like the obstacles of these ordinary things. But the truth is, what I do love about it is it still binds that little bit part of our story that sometimes it's not very convenient.
We are a scrappy church.
To be in square. And what it does is I just think it connects us because in our heart we're connected. Mm-hmm. And I think that the beautiful thing for me is while so many things changed from where we started in the living room or the garage, what I'll tell you is sometimes I still can't believe how much is the same. Mm. And it makes me grateful. I mean, we do on Sunday mornings exactly what we did in February of 2013. It might sound a little better. The AC might be a little more regulated. But what we are, hopefully a little more mature and grown up in Jesus, but the heart we've had, the vision we've had, the desires we've had. One of the things that's so interesting about 10 years in is that when we planted, we had this vision in our heart. We saw it. We believed it. We knew it. It wasn't false attempts or just walking through a process of inevitably needing to write a mission statement. Like, it was in our bones, but still it was hope. It was dreams. It was belief. The amazing thing is to see hope and dream and belief actually come to life. And I think now we know who we are more than we ever had, but it's not different than who we wanted to be. It's mm-hmm. just narrower. It's these things that we knew were in us. Now we know what they actually are. They've gone from seed to tree to fruit. They've gone from hope to reality. And I think what makes me so excited about that is when you think about all of the change that's happened for the heart and the mission to be what it's always been is for me one of the greatest joys of and why I love our church. I'm really thankful. 10 years in, I'm really thankful. Yeah. I can say that. I think about, it's interesting when I ask you about moments that you kind of go all the way back. But when I think about moments, I think about the real high highs and I think about the real low lows. Mm-hmm. 2016 was a magical year. It was the first time I think I'd ever experienced a legitimate season of renewal. I think our church doubled that year. So many people gave their life to Christ that year. We really launched missional communities in a brand new way. But every time we gathered, there was something so precious and powerful and beautiful. It was the first taste of some of the promises of God in some ways. And then I think about, 2020. We all had this very shared experience. We all had very unique experiences in the midst of it. It was a transformational moment in my life. The powerful thing about 2020 was I felt like I had lost everything that we had come to build. It was scary. And I think for me, walking through that season, was a return back to my first heart of planting the church and my first love. I can't say that I would ever want to walk through 2020 again, but I can tell you, I don't want to be the man that didn't go through that. I would take 2020 again to receive its lessons for me. Because when we planted mm-hmm. the square, nothing mattered but Jesus. And anything in my heart that wasn't there, it was just like on the writhing on the outside of me. So there was no in between. And as the church grew over those next, 7 years, I think I couldn't see again how I slipped back into the trust of my gifts and the trust of whatever talents I bring to the table, which is about one. It's called crying. Everything for me that I feel like, oh, I can do this. And then suddenly it's all gone.
Yeah.
And it feels like it may not come back, or it feels like I may not have what it takes for it to come back. And then you realize, oh, there it is. All I'm thinking about is, do I have what it takes? Which means I think we're here because I did have what it took. And that was hard. That was a hard moment to realize my trust had shifted. It was a hard moment for lots of reasons. Our church changed. So many people moved. People left. People changed churches, which now looking back, you realize there's so much positive in the midst of it. And God just has his hand on people. But it was hard. I felt like I was drowning. But God met me before he started to lead the church back to life. And so when I think about moments, I think about those two and even what they represent. Mm. That this first taste of like the presence of God in a way I never experienced before in 2016. And 2020 coming back to the same brokenness in my heart. And I kind of feel like I don't know what the next 10 years is going to look like. But for me, I imagine it will involve both of those things. The moments of God moving like never before, and the moments where I realize, oh man, my heart can trust in myself so easily. And I'm just thankful that Jesus meets me in that. And then of course the moment of earlier this year, the most significant encounters of the presence of God I've ever experienced in my life.
And Easter this year. Easter this year, I was sitting in the front row, which we don't sit in the front row because we think it's special. We sit in the front row because no one likes sitting there. So if anyone feels like the reputation of the front row is that it's staff only, it's not. It's we are taking the bullet for you guys, because sometimes it will be standing room only in the back, empty front row. Still, no one sits there. No one sits there.
I'd rather sit on the ground.
Yeah.
Next to the senior pastor.
I was sitting up there looking around.
Can I just say, I always feel so awkward when a first-time guest gets sat next to us, because I know they're like,
nope.
This is not, they are not coming back. This is not what I signed up for. It's my first time and I have to sit next to that. It's, I almost want to lean over and be like, I'm so sorry. There's a great church down the road next week.
No way. People love the front row when they get up there. Give it a try. And I was looking around. Phil was preaching. I was thinking about how the morning went. And this is the first time this thought has crossed my mind in 10 years. I thought, if everyone on staff just got up right now and went to go get coffee, the church wouldn't miss a beat. Besides Phil preaching and Lindsay leading. Besides those two things that people would notice, no one was doing it. Everything else was covered by our people. They didn't need us for serving. They didn't need us for leading. They didn't need us for loving. They didn't need us for pastoring. They didn't need us for praying. And I just thought, like, this is what I've dreamed of.
Yeah.
Not being needed.
The great reward. Emily's heart.
But that our people took such ownership in our church. That to me was a big moment this year. I felt it all of Sunday service.
When Emily and I moved to Atlanta, the transition from what we led in Seattle was hard. So many of the college students and the interns and the young adults, so many of the people that we had given 6 years for, and honestly, just almost in our, we didn't have the greatest boundaries. We gave everything to, even to an extent we shouldn't have. But we loved these people. And so many of them, after we left, struggled. Many walked away from Jesus, walked away from faith. Many just walked through hard things, and God has been faithful in so many of their stories. But it was a distinctly challenging moment. And I remember feeling the grief of it. And mm-hmm. Emily and I, we were just sitting in the car. And as I processed through it, I had just realized that I had taught people how to be okay because they were close to me, and not how to be okay because they were close to Jesus. And I had this just zeal to just remember saying, whatever we do, we have to teach people to be okay because they're near Jesus, and they're going to be okay knowing how to be near Jesus because they can pray and they can read their Bibles. And it was that conversation where you and I started dreaming about building this school of the New Testament. I don't even remember if we had a name for it then, but this idea of taking this training that we had received through SBS, School of Biblical Studies, which you now lead, and how do we get this in the hands of every single person in our church? Mm-hmm. And now, you and Eliza give birth to the school. You hand it off to Eliza, and she leads it to a new place. And now, in this School of Biblical Studies and School of New Testament, this Biblical Activation Team that's forming, we're having schools of the New Testament replicate in other churches. And I just think about what started as pain in our soul are now hundreds and hundreds of people being transformed by knowing their Bible, and churches around the United States starting to launch schools of the New Testament. Now with the vision of what I believe is going to happen, that we're going to see 1,000 school of the New Testament in different churches around the United States. Like, it just, this is the power of what Jesus does. What started as pain is now turned into life. How many moments were just, it was just God and sincerity. And now I'm like, this is remarkable. I cannot believe God took that and did this. You and Eliza are pretty talented, but I'm still impressed.
Well, the word given to our church about the renewal of Atlanta, it's a big vision to see Atlanta renewed. Those big visions don't happen without the tiny renewals, the renewals of people's mind through the word, the renewal of their hearts back to the Lord, the renewal of their, you know, relationships with friends and family, these little renewals that start in pain, and then you see what God does. They not only build a foundation, like, to grow on, they also build momentum for the future. It's like a exponential growth that God does with renewal, and it is remarkable to see. And we are very talented. One thing that we have based our church off of from the very beginning, when he gave us a zip code in our quiet times, is that we follow the words of the Lord that are given to us, that are trustworthy, in alignment with scripture, from people that have a history of being prophetic. So I'd love to hear, like, what are some of the most impactful prophetic words you've had spoken over the square that we have seen God fulfill? And then what are some of those prophetic words that we're still holding on to, that we get to look forward to the way that he brings it to pass?
Well, the one that immediately comes to my mind, which always immediately comes to my mind, is when Ben Dixon gave us the word that God was going to give us a building the very way back when we were in the garage. And then I remember him stopping and goes, nope, the Lord says he's going to give you two buildings.
Yeah, and, listen, I pray that word every day.
And we believe that. So, you know, I've called Ben and said, hey, can you go back to the Lord? And it's like, is it the first and the second building that are given? Is it the first and the third building? I want to know how to hold this.
First and the third.
No, I believe that. I mean, that was such a guy. In fact, and one of the things Ben said is God is going to bless your community to be a generous people. Yeah. And he said, you'll never fear for finances like most pastors do. And I don't even know if I knew how to hold that then. It's not only is God faithful, the radical generosity of our church. Mm-hmm. Just.
I think generosity is something that we value so much. And I think we try to get that value across to our church, but their generosity goes beyond anything. And our church is generous on its own without us. It's almost like a gift. The Lord's like, not, hey, I'm going to make generosity important, so teach your people. It's like, hey, generosity is important to you, so I'm going to give you generous people. It's just been really sweet.
And I remember some of the distinct things that I felt God spoke to me or to us at the beginning. You know, one of the clearest words God gave me was when we were still in Seattle, when I was wrestling with church planting and the idea of it, moving to Atlanta, all of it. And I remember that's where God talked about building a house for prodigals. Mm-hmm. And I remember him telling me he was sending a prodigal who came home to Atlanta to call people home. I'll tell you, that's just so true. God has built a house for prodigals. I don't think he's done. I'm not done. There's too many prodigals who need to come home. But he has built a house of prodigals, and that's been amazing. Fast forward now, 6 months, 9 months, we're here. I'm struggling again. Clearly, you're hearing the narrative of 2012 and 2013. It was challenging for me, but I was really struggling with how to plant this church, and could I do it? And I just didn't feel capable, and this is where I had a real encounter with God, where I said, you've set me up to fail. I can't do this. I didn't come here out of my choice. You asked me to come here. I can't do this. God said, Phil, I didn't send you here to plant a church. I sent you here to plant a church in every neighborhood of Atlanta. I will hold on to that for my life. I know it was the Lord. Hmm. And in the beginning, it was out of that what God did is he had to take something out of my own capabilities. I was in doubt, not because it was in my hands. And the Lord had to speak something to me that was so beyond me, and I knew it was beyond me, that I had to place my faith in him. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what he did. He helped me do that. And that brought courage to that first season. What I know is that word is what's coming. Mm-hmm. You know, in the beginning, when I shared this word with our church, I talked about 67 churches. Jesus never spoke to me about 67 churches. He did tell me to plant a church in every greater neighborhood of Atlanta. That was exactly what he said. And I remember sitting with an app thinking all the places where I could plant a church in Atlanta, and I had 67. Now I look at that and I can tell you that the next 10 years, we're going to plant, over the life of our church, we're going to plant more than 67 churches. I know that God has called the square to be a movement that plants churches not only here in Atlanta, but in the United States and all over the world. Like, the season of mobilization is coming. I doubt we'll plant 67 churches in Atlanta, not because we can't or God can't. I don't think it strategically makes sense. I think that was a very hopeful map I put together. But I do believe that the season about strategically, and I believe this, from Northwest Metro Atlanta, from Kennesaw to Canton, to Southeast, to Stone Mountain and Tucker and to Conyers, to Decatur, to the West Side, to Midtown, to College Park. I mean, the season is coming where our church, which has been for Smyrna, and then over the last 10 years has become for the Northwest region, it's time for it to become for the city.
Yeah.
And that is not only going to stay as the square, as this hub that loves and serves and reaches our city, but the future of planting communities. And yeah, it makes me so proud of the three who've planted, and they've all planted that of their own courage, and God speaking to them of April and of Jay and of Mitch, and just them stepping out into that place. But what I'm excited about is what we've learned over the last 10 years is that coming alongside planting a new community requires a church that can sustain that level of care and mm-hmm. love yeah. and raise up leaders to send. And I think we've been there for a few years, and then COVID did this thing that it did. But the season is here. New building, no new building, doesn't matter. The future is here, and part of that future is stepping into the movement we were called to be. So that word about planting a church into every greater neighborhood, and in that, one of the things that God has clearly revealed is that that's not just English-speaking churches. Mm-hmm. That I believe we're called to see the gospel change Atlanta in Spanish. And one of the distinct next steps is about planting the Spanish-speaking congregation of the square with the purposes of beginning to replicate Spanish-speaking churches mm-hmm. in Atlanta. And so for me, I'm ready. This has been a word in my heart for so long. And I'm just so excited that the time, I think, has come that we're the kind of church that can start sustainably planting a movement of churches.
It's kind of like that word we got back in Seattle too, that Atlanta will be like an Antioch city, a place where people come to get trained and then sent out. I see Jesus doing that in Atlanta in all different kinds of ways, not just through the square, but even people just saying, I feel called to move to Atlanta. And you're like, you're amazing. I can't believe we get you. And whether they come to the square or going to YWAM Atlanta or going to other ministries south of the city, I just think God is calling Atlanta to be in Antioch. And he is asking the square to train the leaders that he's sending so that we can send them out and support them.
The things that I love about what God has done, is it just all speaks to what he's still about to do. Mm-hmm. I look back at the last 10 years now. And for me, what I see is just the first part of the roadmap of the things he's going to do beyond what we could understand. That the things that have started in forms of food pantry and up tutoring and foster care ministry and food delivery are just the smallest picture of what it's going to look like to love and radically care for our community. The launching of S&T and S&Ts, the planting now a School of Biblical Studies, it's just the first picture of a movement of biblical literacy across the church, the pictures of even home churches. I mean, I still remember the first two missional communities we tried to start, and what God is doing in home churches, and our steps towards so many pieces of our future. It's like you can look back, and you just go, oh, I see what the future is going to be like. Because it's going to be the flourishing of all that God has started. And that makes me really excited.
Remember how when we had our first missional communities, we met on a different day of the week, each week of the month? Uh-huh.
We were so idealistic and stupid. I look back at some of those first decisions.
That was a fun missional community, but I'm like, is today a Wednesday or a Thursday week?
Oh, yeah. Who knows? Midnight church, missional community, we're going to just change it up on you.
Yep.
You really want to be in it.
We tried to make it very inconvenient church. But ironically, when we met in the garage church, we had more toilets available to people.
It's painful.
Than here.
It is really quite painful. But, I mean, as a pastor, there are times where like, I have to go to the bathroom so bad But I know I'm just waiting until after the third service ends.
They have nice bathrooms over at Cobb Park, actually.
Come to the square.
Come to the square. Don't wear heels.
Across the street.
You might twist your ankle.
No walkway has nice bathrooms.
Nice bathrooms.
They're so gross.
They're
just literally bathrooms.
They're not outhouses, is what I'm saying. What are they called? Porta potties? They're not porta potties. Cement bathrooms. It's nice enough.
Listen, when
cement bathrooms are good enough for the square
when
church.
You fell in love on the mission field. Anything above a porta potty is a good bathroom.
Anything above a squatty potty is a good bathroom.
This is not making it into the video.
Yes, it will.
Oh, yes, it will. Man. The 10 years. It's not. We might be the ones making this video, but this is not our story. Like this. I think that's the part actually means so much. This is not our story. Like, this is all of our story. That what God is doing through the square is going back what you said on Easter. We could have stepped out of the building. Sans me and Lindsay, but if I would have tapped Levi Colson on the shoulder or number of people said, hey, you got this today. And Lindsay could have done the same. I think that's the part that makes me so excited about the future, because if we have the same heart and the same vision with clearer identity and practices and the ways to get to what God has called us to do with all of us. What can Jesus not do? As I come towards 10 years, my question is, what can Jesus not do? If he did what he's done with how little we gave him at the beginning, what can he do now? Whatever that is, I want.
But I actually think we gave him everything. We are a church of people who give everything. And God can do anything with our everything.
That's it, isn't it?
And more toilets.
Everything and more toilets.
Everything.
That's all I want.
Everything.
Here's the vision for the next 10 years. Everything and God, please, a few more toilets.